Hello and welcome to this fourbarsrest.com British Open podcast brought to you in association with Normans. I'm Anthony Banwell and I'm in Birmingham where the 155th Championships took place at the Symphony Hall on Saturday the 15th of September. And with me to talk through all 18 performances of the test piece Visions of Gerontius by Kenneth Downey is Four Bars Rest editor Ewan Fox and British Bandsman editor Kenny Crookston. Now, unfortunately, we were unable to secure any music for this podcast, so we're going to go straight to the band, starting at the top with the 2007 champions, the Corey Band. Ewan, 2 wins, 3 seconds in the sixth, all in the last 6 years. That's some record.
It is some record. They had to wait from 2002 was the last time they won here. Last 3 years, they've had 3 second places, so it possibly was overdue. But, you know, no complaints at all. They were quite brilliant on the weekend and fully deserved the victory.
And Bob Charles, he was delighted.
He was delighted. You couldn't blame him, really. You know, he's been up against his brother, who's had the whip hand, really, at the major contests over the last couple of years. But this time, even though they had to follow Black Dyke on stage, they were quite outstanding. And, you know, he was delighted when we spoke to him after the results.
Dr. Robert Charles, the winning conductor of the 2007 British Open Championships, the Corey Band, congratulations. What are your feelings?
Well, I'm delighted for the band. You know, we've just come here now for the last 3 years and got second. And I know second at the British Open is quite special in itself. But for the players that work so hard, I'm really pleased. And I'm pleased that me and Nick got our Isles Award as well today. Mm-hmm. But I have to say that if we could have got first last year, I'd have took second this year, just for Black Dyke to have got the hat-trick. I did feel a tinge of disappointment for Nick because I know he's worked really hard as well, and having played at Black Dyke, I do have a soft spot for them. But no, the band's played, I mean, I don't think we've played any better this year than we've played the last few years. Mm-hmm. But we just had a little bit of luck. We had a good draw. The band performed superbly, and you know, you can't do anything about how other people play, but obviously the way other people play affects the result as well.
Did you feel, of course, Black Dyke with the band immediately on before you,
yeah,
and they had a fantastic reception from the hall. Did that just fill, the adrenaline started pumping then for you and the players?
I tell you what I did, Ewan. There's a rehearsal room backstage, and I took the band in there. I left Black Dyke in the corridor, so we stayed in the registration, so we didn't pass cross. Our pass didn't cross with Black Dyke there. As soon as Black Dyke came on stage, I took the band into the rehearsal room, and we stayed in there. I let them stay in there. I came out, made sure Black Dyke had finished, all the applause had gone, and then we walked on stage. They had no idea how they'd played.
Right. Now, the piece itself, fortunately, we came to listen to it a number of occasions for you. You must have an affinity with Kenneth Downey's music. It seems to appeal to you in the band.
Yeah, well, we performed St. Magnus really well, and the thing is with Ken's music, it's absolutely full of detail. Mm. And if you've got the time to find that detail and the soloists to play the expressive stuff, you're always going to be in with a shout. This is quite a tricky piece, really, because I think it wasn't as obvious as St. Magnus, and it wasn't the technical demands. Well, they weren't as easy overcomable, if you know what I mean. It seemed as if there was a long section where the music was written in 5/8, and I'm not sure. I asked Ken and he wouldn't tell me, but I'm not sure that music was conceived in 5/8 or whether he's joining the conductor's club and moving things around a little bit. But certainly it was a tricky piece of music to put together.
Details that was brought out with Stephen Mead, who the adjudicator, he said there was the way in which the very best bands and as the winners brought out the difference in the low dynamics, yes, mezzo piano, mezzo forte, where he thought a lot of bands just played at one mono level. Do you find that was a secret of getting the detail out?
Well,
of the
we
music?
Certainly worked it out, because in the long macabre waltz section there was big chunks of mezzo piano, mezzo forte, mezzo piano, mezzo forte, and it just needed to be a bit louder than a bit softer, and it's so easy for players to see mezzo piano, mezzo forte, and see the same dynamic, really, you know what I mean. But no, I'm really pleased. Hopefully it'll be a boost for Welsh banding, it'll be a boost for the applicants at the Royal Welsh College of Music, and who knows, if we get more people at the Royal Welsh College of Music, then they might do the PGC down there and stay in Wales, and it'll benefit the whole of Welsh banding.
But on a personal note, of course, you and your brother picked up the Isles medal,
yep,
and I know everybody in the brass band movement. I know a lot of people from Tralee, which is your old stamping ground, yeah, from many years ago, are very proud of the achievements as well.
Yep.
So that must have been very proud, and I'm sure something that your late father when he looked at, when he had his two young players in the band. I don't think whether or not he thought he was Urial's medal material.
I'm sure that he didn't. I think he was surprised when I moved up north to Grindthorpe and got the Sol Euphonium job, and then even more surprised when I moved to Brighouse and Nick got the Grindthorpe job. So all of a sudden he was the father of two Euphonium players in top bands, and I think that to him was probably the best he thought we'd ever do. To think that Nick and myself have gone on to conduct top bands was just it's unbelievable for myself. I have to pinch myself sometimes when I'm listening to the players I've got in front of me. And you're right, the two bands I've got a very close affinity to is the Tredegar band. I was in their learner section, and Ivor Powell, Tom Powell's a brother. I played in the junior band. We won the national championships with the junior band. I played in the senior band. I don't think I've conducted them. Not because I've avoided
it. This time yet, I don't know.
I've not been invited.
I'm saying that
yet.
As president, you know.
Well, Black Dyke and Tredegar are very close to my heart.
Well, congratulations both on the Isles Medal Award and also for a third Mortimer Trophy, which you've got there. So the mantelpiece must be groaning under the strain of those.
Well, you know, people were coming up to me today saying, oh, you know, bridesmaid, and we really hope you can do it today. And I said, look, hold on a second. I've conducted the band for 7 years now at the British Open, and we got one third, and we got three seconds and three firsts. That's not too bad.
Ewan Fox talking to Corey MD, Bob Childs. Kenny Crookston, tell us a little bit more about their performance then of the set work Visions of Gerontius.
Yeah, it was. I think it's probably one of the finest performances that Corey Band has ever done. In fact, certainly the best one I've heard them do for a number of years. I'm sure you'd have been hard pushed to find anyone in the hall after Black Dyke's performance from number 15 that would actually have thought it was beatable. It was absolutely tremendous, and I'm sure most people in the hall thought they were on for a hat trick. But Corey came along, a completely different approach to the music, very well controlled, really tasty all the way through, great solo work. There was absolutely nothing went wrong, 100% to plan, and I'm sure Bob must have been absolutely delighted with that one.
I've got to agree with Kenny when he says that, but the strange thing about it was that after Black Dyke played, they took the roof off, and there was people cheering everywhere, and most people thought they were really going to do the hat trick. But strangely, Corey was still in the rehearsal room at the back of the hall, and they heard none of that. And by the time they got onto the stage, they hadn't an idea really how Black Dyke had played. So, there was real pressure on them as well to play really
well.
It was
a completely different approach to the music, though, wasn't it? Black Dyke was a much more robust performance. Huge sounds coming through for the band.
It was. There was a bit of a you had a tingle when Black Dyke played. Yeah. I think, especially at the end when you had Peter Roberts, when he had the main tune coming in. It was thrilling stuff. It was there, but Corey had real control.
Control was the key to the victory, wasn't it?
Yeah, a lot of conviction with their play. Yeah. The corner section is so brilliant, and they can just about play anything. I got Michelle Ibbotson on soprano.
She was great. Maturity sound about a lot of their players now, though. In the last few years, they've really improved in that front, haven't they?
It is, and I think one of the things now is the middle of the band sound, which you can really hear the baritones and the horns. You can really balance that because they've got fantastic players. Ian Williams, a solo corner player, and David Childs on euphonium. Such strong players, but the middle of the band comes through.
And a huge bass section.
In more ways than one, I think, if you can say that. They're big lads, but they make a fantastically big sound. It does help by somebody like Steve Sykes there, because I think he's given them now there was little bits that he was doing, and you could actually hear it. He was like listening to a fantastic euphonium player, and that really is done. They've got that extra touch of class about them now, so congratulations to them, and especially to some of the players as well. Ian Williams, who's been the principal corner with the band, I think, for nearly 20 years now. And you could tell that when we caught up with both Ian Williams and David Charles.
Ian Williams, who's the principal corner player of the Corey band. Congratulations, Ian. Third victory year at the British Open. Long time coming since 2002, and you've had some close shaves in the past, but you must be delighted with this one.
Oh, I'm absolutely thrilled. It's a fantastic achievement again. Three second places is good, but runner-up is no good to anybody. Mm. There's no feeling like winning. The winning feeling is second and then.
Did you find when you, that I've told Bob Chaz that you said that Black Dyke were on before you, was the adrenaline going through, really shooting through the veins, but, or do you just thought yourself take it cool, and because it was a very quiet start at the beginning of the piece?
Well, I think Bob, actually, he pulled a masterstroke there. We stayed in the practice room. We never heard any of the audience reaction to Black Dyke, so we stayed out of it. We were totally focused in what we had to do, and not hearing anybody else. We came out and performed. The start was, it had to be spot on. Mm. It had to be perfect. It set the scene for the whole piece. And the band was absolutely magnificent. You couldn't have played it any better.
Kenneth Downey's pieces seem to suit Corey. Do you think you should get another one soon?
Well, hopefully. I mean, you know, we've had a bit of luck with them, so let's hope we can produce another one. It's not so much Kenneth Downey, it's new music. Bob Childs is a master at new music. He spends so much time with the scores and fetches music out of it where really it isn't there. So that the personal slant that goes in, you know, it's what's helped us to achieve this. It's fantastic for the band and for Bob.
Well, you've got the Royal Albert Hall to look forward to now in a month's time. Do you think you'll make it a double?
Hopefully. I've got a hell of a cornet solo in that one. David Childs and myself, I think we'll have to get together for 3 weeks. But with a bit of luck and a prevailing wind, you never know.
Well, congratulations, Ian. I know you've been with the band a long time now. I wouldn't like to say how long you have
been. Well, I'm not going to say.
No, I want to say. You're still looking young anyway. All I can say, it's a good job we're on the radio and not on television. But congratulations. Well, you've been a long servant for the band, and it couldn't have gone to a better person. Many thanks
very much. Cheers. Appreciate it.
David Childs. Fantastic day for the Childs family, and especially for yourself with the band. The last time you won here was in 2002, so it's been a little while coming, so you must be delighted for the band to start off with.
Oh, I'm absolutely delighted for the band, for my family, particularly for my dad. I joined Corey 5 years ago, and the first contest I did was the British Open, and we won. And so I've been trying to emulate that ever since, and it's taken 5 years, but hopefully be the first of many.
Did the band think that they played really well when the final note was played?
Well, you know, it's a funny thing because the band have felt they've played well the last four times.
Yeah.
And sometimes it just doesn't go your way. But today we knew we had to put down a good performance, and if we did that, it was in the lap of the gods, and the adjudicators liked it. And on this day, we got the result that we wanted.
It's strange that the Soloist Award went to Black Dyke Soprano Award. But as we know in brass band, it's usually a signal that possibly that band has come runners-up and not winners. So
it can be. I mean, often it's known as a bit of a consolation prize. But I've got to say that when Corey won it in 2000, Nigel John, my predecessor, won the solo prize, mm-hmm. and the band won the competition. So that certainly wasn't going through my mind. I think it's fair to say that we knew our biggest competition was Black Dyke. And had they won it, I think Man for Man, we'd have congratulated them because they're a fantastic band, but it was our turn today.
Well, you had a little bit of an easy day today. Well, relatively speaking.
It's never easy.
I know that. I wouldn't know that unless I retire now. But the other thing now, you've got London to look forward to and the possibility, hopefully, of doing a double there.
Yeah.
But the pressure will be on, and it's going to be a severe test for you as a soloist, possibly.
Well, I think so. Yeah, it's a big part, and the pressure's always on. You know, if you're a band like Corey and player in the band, then you're expected to play well. If you don't play well, then people talk about it. So the pressure's always on. But certainly, I'm looking forward to the Nationals. In all honesty, I like having a lot to do. It gives me something to go at.
Ewan Fox talking to Ian Williams and David Childs. So then, you've mentioned Black Dyke. What was the main difference between Black Dyke and Corey on these two performances?
Well, they were two different performances. I think Kenny would agree with that. Yeah. As you say, Black Dyke, a bit more robust about it. It. You know, the hairs in the back of the neck did stand on end at times with their ears. They had a little, one or two little clips here and there, but it was brilliant, really.
It was a solid sound, though, wasn't it? That was what really affirmed it as a great performance. That solid sound just got bigger and bigger towards the end. The last few pages of the score was England stuff.
It was like barnstorming finish, yeah, with them. I don't think they could have done anything more, really, to try and win the hat-trick.
Actually, personally, I think it's probably it might actually be the best performance of the last 3 years.
Yeah.
But it was beaten fairly and squarely.
Yeah, I know. Last year they were fantastic, I thought, on Vienna Nights. This time it was still another fantastic performance, but all of a sudden another one came along and just topped it. It would have been very close, I think, and the adjudicator said that, but those two bands, they were a good distance ahead of everybody else.
But it really provided a great end to the contest, didn't it? Because, I mean, they came on at 15 and 16. When things were maybe just starting to go into a bit of a lull, and there had been some decent earlier performances, and then maybe had four or five that just weren't quite there. But then 15 and 16 came on, and suddenly the hall had been set alight, hadn't it?
It rounded off the contest brilliant, I think, isn't it? Because you said for about 2 hours before that, we had worthy performances, yeah, but nothing that really set the pulses racing. And then they came in. And the thing about it was, it made the piece sound so interesting and fantastic. And it was interesting as well to listen to Dr. Kenneth Downey when we managed to speak to him as well about his thoughts about the piece, and especially the winning performance and that of Black Dyke.
We're here with Dr. Kenneth Downey, who was the composer of today's test piece, Visions of Gerontius. Dr. Downey, you must have been delighted with the playing that you heard today. What were your reflections on the day?
Well, first of all, I listened to every band, every note. I was determined to, and it wasn't difficult, to be honest. And I hadn't heard the piece until this weekend. And I'm really, really grateful. I found it very moving at times, extremely moving. And there were some wonderful performances. And from every performance, I got something. And so my congratulations to them all.
The piece is dedicated, of course, to Leighton Rich. And in its way, describes his final journey, in effect. Would you think he would have really enjoyed what he had heard today, the music that you've written?
Well, his wife Val is here, and his son David. And they assure me he would. And we all kind of think maybe he could hear it as well.
Well, I'm sure if he did, he would have thought it was fantastic. And the winning performances with the Corey Band and Black Dyke, they really did put the hairs on the back of your neck, really did stand on end.
Yes, I mean, it's difficult to separate such good music, such good performances. The technique is comfortable for them all. It's just, I guess, in the end, a few nuances, a few different expressions. I thought both of the performances had real passion. And I mean, there were three or four excellent performances, but those two were really outstanding. And it's wonderful to see it going to Corey's. They seem to do quite well with my pieces.
Yes, I think I got a funny feeling they maybe ask you to write another one for you as well. And hopefully in the future, is there any more test pieces in the pipeline?
Well, I'm having a little rest from test pieces. I've just done another one since the Open, and I've got two to do next year, not great big ones, but it's time to write a few smaller things, I think. But yeah, I mean, it's always ticking away in my mind. I guess they'll come, I hope.
Ewan Fox talking to Kenneth Downey. So Black Dyke were there, they were trying for the treble, they just missed out. The musical director, Nick Charles, he must have been disappointed.
He was disappointed, but fair play to him. He's the first person to go on stage, whoever had won, I think, and offered his congratulations to them. He was being followed by, I think it was a BBC camera crew as well, for a programme which is going to be going out, I think, in October at some time. It would have been a brilliant fairy tale finish if he had, you know, won the hat trick. But it wasn't to be on this occasion. But when we spoke to him, there was a mixture of disappointment and some elation, because he was awarded the Isles Medal with his brother on the day. But he was quite philosophical about it and really summed up, you know, they give it their best shot, but it wasn't just to be, so they're not in the history books as a hat-trick winner.
Nicholas Giles, you had one fantastic award today, which was the Isles Medal. You were runners-up today, so you just missed out on the hat-trick. So a mixture of disappointment and an elation, possibly?
I think that's a good description, because, yeah, you're right. You know, when you conduct Black Dyke and you come second, whether I like it or not, it's considered failure. And it's one of those situations that, you know, in the cruel world, you know, then people start to look at other people. And, you know, that is reality. Elation is elation, because I was stood next to my brother, and the solo prize came out, the soprano prize came out, and perhaps you were thinking he was perhaps going to go to the younger brother, but on this occasion he went to Bob. And of course I'm delighted for him. He's been runner up for the last 2 years, and I know those competitions have been tight as well. To Welsh Banding, to Corey, I could not wish them any more better luck than today. They're a fantastic band. And of course, I didn't hear the beginning, but of course, I dived up from our performance to come and listen to them. Mm-hmm. And so I did know that it was a great performance too. So great luck to them. And make no mistake, I'll still be celebrating with them tonight. But then I'll be in my band with picking up my players as well to remind them that they're still a great band too.
And on a personal note as well, the award of the Isles Medal, both for yourself and for Robert. I know the Welsh people who would, and from Tredegar especially, would congratulate you for that. That must be something that you're very proud of as well.
Absolutely. It's when you look at the names that have gone on before that, it's a privilege. And so, you know, to be able to share it with my brother on this day, then just really fantastic.
Many thanks, Nick, and I hope you have a decent night in Birmingham anyway.
Thank you.
Ewan Fox talking to Nick Childs. Let's talk a little bit more about the test piece then, Visions of Gerontius. We've seen some great works from Kenneth Downey. What do you think of this one?
I think the obvious comparison was got to be with St Magnus. You know, that's his last piece that he did for the European Championships in 2004. Obviously, the pieces are kind of similar in nature, being based on the hymn tune as they are. Completely different from the Promised Land, which we heard from Corey last year at the European in Belfast. But an exciting piece nevertheless in places. As far as the future of the piece is concerned and how many times we'll hear it played, there's always a chance that it might be one that could disappear into the mist of time.
Yeah, I think you're right there. There's something about it. There's not a focal point where people say, you know, like the huge euphonium solo, yeah, or cadenza or something, you know, standard parts that happen with the Wilby and that. It's more an ensemble piece.
You've got so many changes of tempo as well, which makes it difficult to pull out a really exciting performance in that no-choice situation, doesn't it?
Good. It's a good piece, though. I really enjoyed it. I think the audience enjoyed it.
It certainly did the job of sorting the bands out. The cream really did rise to the top, didn't it?
It did. And the other thing about it as well, when you did hear a good performance of it, it sounded a fantastic work.
Yeah.
When you heard a middling or poor performance of it, it just sounded very difficult.
But it was the bands that brought the detail out, the ones that got there, wasn't it?
It was. And those two bands, Dyke and Corey, I don't think anybody in Hall really had anybody else other than those two to win it.
Let's take a look at some other performances then. Behind Black Dyke, we've got Foden's, Desford and Grimthorpe. Ewan, give me your thoughts on those three performances.
Well, Foden's and Grimthorpe were drawn 3 and 4. They possibly may keep kicking themselves if they were drawn later on the day. But again, I don't think it would have affected the result in any way. Foden's came on first off the number 3 draw. Excellent performance, really musical. Again, solid, no-nonsense approach from Gary Cutt. But again, such a mature-sounding band now. And
fantastic
very solid
bass name. Section, though. The sound's built on that great bass section that they have, done, isn't it? You know, I don't think there's a better-sounding bass section around right now than Foden's.
No, and the other thing is, well, the solid corn at the end they've got as well. Yeah. And Mark
it was really clean as well, though, wasn't it?
It was a good one. The only thing possibly about it was is that because it was such a performance early on, it was always going to be difficult to win off the number 3. But
it was the first one that we really had detail.
It was, and it stood out for such a long time, even with Grimthorpe, who came on directly after them.
I thought that the two bands were very close, actually, in standard. It was two different performances, different approach. Grimthorpe were slightly more aggressive, perhaps. However, Grimthorpe have got real quality in there as well. Great soloists, great ensemble, great conductor in Alan Withington, who had a really good approach to the music. But he just felt that, was it quite enough to beat Foden's? I don't think it was.
Well, the stretching, I don't know if you realise it, I think it was Steve Mead turned around and told us that the adjudicators felt that, I think it was the tin player came in something like 6 or 7 bars early, rated fairly at the beginning of the piece.
It was early in the day, we never made the piece well enough to notice that.
It is, and possibly that may have cost them a point, a point or whatever there, but there was so much quality about them, It's strange Alan Witherden doesn't get a lot of luck here at the British Open. Perhaps he'd win it one day, I'm quite sure of it. But
you wouldn't have back against him in London, though, would you?
No, if that performance had been in London, then it would have been hard to beat. But there's just something about it as well. When a little bit later on the day, a little bit more refinement, I think, with Corey and Black Dyke, and it came in fifth place. But Fordham's were good value for third. I've got to give them that. They're a fine band at the moment and very well led by Gary Cutt.
Another band that broke into that group was Desford with Franz Violet.
Fantastic performance. Yeah. What do you think? I thought it was the best reading of the score all day.
I thought so as well. I mean, sometimes you can get a bit put off track watching Franz Violet because he's not the most elegant conductor in the world.
No, he's all arms, isn't he? Doesn't
stick your head in the score and listen, though. It's the same when he conducts Wallybrook, it's easy to become blinded by what you see, and it can distract you from the actual performance. But it was I thought Desford had a real beauty about their approach to the music yesterday that no other band really had.
It was a bit like I think we wrote down, it was like ballet music. He took all the aggression out of it, and he concentrated on, because a lot of the dynamics in the piece were mezzo piano, mezzo forte, but he made differences between it. It was all graded, all the dynamics all the time. If they did have an Achilles heel, it was perhaps they missed Martin Britt, who was usually a fine soprano player. I think his wife has just had a baby. The chap who did the job for them, brave as he was and a decent player, he wasn't in that class. And if they just had him like the cherry on top of the cake, I think they could have really been up there pushing for, the top prize.
But Desford have got a really strong band again, haven't they? They've got really strong players right around the stand, you can hear that.
Well, years ago, I think we used to say they were a bit of a mystery band, but not anymore. They've got a group of players there You know, people like Mike Kilroy on Euphonium, etc. Dave Smith, who was the principal corner player,
he was fantastic, wasn't he?
Fabulous player. And when they get somebody in front of them who can really marshal them intelligently, there's not many better bands than them around. They've got to give them, the last few occasions we've heard them, they've been perhaps the most musical band in the contests. So they fully deserve to come where they did in the prizes. Rich reward, and it's great to see Franz Violet. We'd like to see him conducting here more often, I think.
And in sixth place then, from Scotland, the Whitburn Band. Kenny, tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, well, Whitburn were obviously delighted by the sixth place, as we've seen last night.
Yeah, they should be delighted as well, because we didn't put them anywhere near sixth place, unfortunately. We had them about 14th, but I know you're going to disagree with me.
I thought there were one of a number of bands, there was about four or five bands that could have claimed the sixth place. I admit that they probably got the roll of the dice over these other bands. But I thought it was a very convincing approach to the music. I think the band was quite robust. A bit uncharacteristically robust, even.
I think he was very scrappy.
And there were slips in there. There was a couple of moments of bad tune, which might have been the ones that you just might have thought, well, that's not their day.
We'll have to agree to disagree on that one. I had him down around about 12, 13, 14, something around there. But, you know, Andy Duncan, good musician, and he had the nod on this occasion. The strange thing is that Hepworth and I think it was Fairies who came behind them, much the same. I thought Hepworth were very, very good.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
They're totally different band from the one that we heard originally in Cambridge. They must have taken our remarks on board from after Cambridge, because
really well controlled, wasn't it?
Since then, yeah. I think in Preston they were excellent with the game second, and again, really, they're much more refined now. They don't play the harshness and try and blow their way through it.
They've got some really classy solos, haven't they?
Oh, Rob Westercott and solo cornet, Mark Smedley on soprano. They were terrific. They were again. I think they could possibly count themselves a little bit unlucky. Eighth was, you know, a good result for them, but you know, possibly they may have thought they would have come in the prizes.
They were the one that I actually thought would have claimed the sixth place.
Mm. But you know, again, they're a good band, and I think they'll do well again in London. I don't know about Fairies, though.
Yeah, I was a bit unconvinced by Fairies. Seventh place, you know, it's a decent result for them. It keeps them secure in the competition for another few years, but I'm not completely convinced that they're going the right direction right now.
No, they say they're rebuilding, you know, and fair play, Phil Chalk is a talented conductor, and, you know, he must be delighted and the band must be delighted, but they've got a long way to go yet before they are back winning prizes at the major contests.
On to 9th, 10th and 11th places then, Rothwell, YBS and Brighouse and Rastrick. Kenny, start us off with Rothwell. They played number one.
Yeah, the dreaded number one for Rothwell, but I still think they gave a good account of themselves. It was a very clean performance, perhaps just missing a bit of dynamic contrast that some of the later bands did give us. And I found it was difficult to hear it with real clarity.
Solid performance. You know? They're a solid band there, and it was a solid performance. It just possibly needed a little bit more spice about it. But off number one to come ninth is a good achievement, isn't it?
It was a good marker. I know the band were delighted with the performance as well. So,
well, I think
there's any more than that.
And it kept them in the contest as well, because they were one of the bands that were possibly on the edge of possible relegation. But again, they're a good band, and I'm sure they'll be, you know,
certainly going in the right direction.
Fair play to them.
YBS, you know, 10th place. It was probably just about right, wasn't it?
It was. I've got to admit, it was very Dickie Evans direction, wasn't it?
He did a great job of them, didn't he?
It does. All of a sudden, you know, there was none of the real flamboyance about it, and he made sure that they put everything in its place.
Yeah, it was pretty well controlled, wasn't it?
And I think, as you said, you know, they're a band that's possibly rebuilding as well. They're a work in progress, really.
But they're rebuilding in the right direction. They're actually moving forward, I think. You know,
they picked up some good players, haven't they? But there was a solidity about them as well. You know, 10th place, you know, a couple of years ago, people would be raising eyebrows, but to get 10th place with the band that they got at the moment, I think is a fine result.
And Brighouse then?
I think another disappointment for Brighouse at this contest. That's 3-4 years in a row now. They've really underperformed, haven't they?
Yeah, they got some. I think there's some real structural problems within the band that, you know, not pinpointing individual players, but the way your test pieces are written at the present time, you can't get around it. And the problem is that they're fantastic when they blow in.
But they've been really convincing in other events, haven't they? I mean, the good performance in Bradford, and the one well at Brass and Concert last year.
Yeah, but they're
what's wrong when they come here?
Yeah, but they're thrilling when they can really put a little bit of beef into their play. And when it gets down to the real quiet dynamics, they sound quite fragile then, and there are problems that they can't really overcome. Alan Morrison is doing a real good job with them. But again, they just lack that little bit of finesse, I think.
The direction
really
wasn't the problem yesterday, really. It was the execution, wasn't it?
It is, but, you know, I'm sure they would do better at London than they would do here. I don't think really Symphony Hall suits the way in which they play.
Into the midfield placings, then 12th, 13th and 14th, we've got Carlton Main, Reg Vardy and Scottish Co-op.
Well, I think you're right in saying that the midfield places, they never looked like any of the bands, never looked like they were going to force their way really into the top 10 and certainly not in the top 6. Carlton Main disappointed.
No, none of the three of them had their best day, did they? But Carlton Main wasn't really a patch in the band we heard in Cambridge, was it?
No, somehow they didn't sound comfortable with the work. It didn't quite suit them. They had too many inherent problems from the word go. And some of their players who have been playing brilliantly over the last year or so just didn't perform the day.
Slightly less convincing than normal.
It was. So, you know, 12th place for them.
That's probably right.
Yeah.
Reg Vardy in 13th. They're in free fall at the moment, aren't they?
Well, where are Reg Vardy going, Kenny?
Well, it looks like Blackpool's the next destination for Reg Vardy, I'm afraid.
It is. It's amazing to think that, you know, a few years ago they were so, so close to winning the Nationals.
They were great.
But since then,
it's all gone wrong, hasn't it?
Yeah, every time we hear them, there's something goes wrong with them. I don't know if it's the approach, I don't know whether or not the players are lacking confidence, but they just sound a band that has no focus about them, do they?
It's just lost its ability to convince, isn't it? So, but the same with Co-op, they were really quite weak yesterday as well, weren't they?
It was, and it was strange because Co-op usually put together a very well constructed performance, but this one didn't really have a lot about it, and the percussion section was,
yeah, it was all over the place,
miles away. Yeah. You know, some of it was like chucking a bag of frozen peas around.
I mean, in their defence, I mean, it was a percussion section that was thrown together at the last minute, we understand, but you know, it is the British Open. So.
Well, I think the bands were found out as well. You can't get in a percussion section on pieces like this a week before. It just doesn't work. And that, I think, undermined everything that they actually did. So, you know, Carlton Main disappointing. Reg Vardy very disappointing. Scottish Co-op, I think they will live to fight another day. But all three bands can have no complaints, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
You mentioned there of Reg Vardy having to go to the Grand Shield next year. And the band that came in 15th place, Aveline Newham, looks like they're going back to Blackpool as well.
Well, they are going back to Blackpool, unfortunately for them, but they put up a brave fight. A lot of people tipped them to come, you know, bottom of the pile at the contest this time, but they'd obviously worked their socks off at the piece. And
15th wasn't a bad return for them, actually. It was a fairly musical performance. It was just littered with mistakes, wasn't it?
But I think they found, like the rest of it, it's a bit like the football now, is that the bands that are coming up from the Grand Shield
found it hard, didn't they?
You know, there's a real gulf now, and I think the bands that came towards the bottom of the pile this year, two of them were from the Grand Shield, Sellers and Polly Steel. Aveline have had 2 years at the contest, you know, great experience for them, but they really now know what you've got to do, the work you've got to put in to make a mark at this standard. 15th worked hard at it, but they're going to find themselves back in Blackpool, and it's going to be hard work to get back out of there to come back to this contest in the future for them.
You mentioned the Ewan Polly Steel and Sellers, who obviously qualified from the Grand Shield this year. Disappointing results for them down in 16th and 17th.
Well, I don't know about you, Kenny, but the Sellers were not the patch of the band we've heard recently.
Near it, were they? I mean, they got off to a bad start. A number of bands did split the first note. It's a middle D. How hard can it be, you know? You know, okay, it's Symphony Hall and it's the British Open, but a middle D, and somebody really splashed it and it got off to a really bad start and sent a real murmur around the hall, that one, didn't it?
And they didn't recover.
They never recovered, though, did they?
No, some of the performances, quite a few of the bands, in fact, I think Whitburn were one of them, and they blobbed the first note, but they recovered afterward.
Instantly, it was back on track again, wasn't it?
Yeah, but Sellers just... It trundled along, didn't it? It never sounded as if... No. It sounded under-rehearsed more than anything, which I doubt if that was the case. But the reading wasn't... accurate enough, I don't think, to really bring any music out of it. And the players just lacked confidence, I think, and they've got no complaint. They'll find it difficult, I think, to survive here.
Well, they need a good one next year.
Mm. And what do you think of Polly Steel, though?
Well, again, it wasn't a patch in the band that we heard in Blackpool in May, was it? You know, I'm impressed at the English National. They were really great there.
I got a funny feeling that it sounded as if it was a performance where they had got to a level where they could have left the piece alone for a couple of days before the contest, but they can't. I think Philip Hart possibly fiddled with it too much.
I think over-enthusiastic's a word we could possibly use as well.
Well, I think the players on stage at the end must have thought they were in the top six because they were hugging and cheering themselves, and the rest of us were looking at each other thinking, this is not particularly good.
But the heart and the percussion section were the real noticeable point, weren't they? You know, they were way, way over the top.
Yeah, the tin player went bonkers at the end, didn't he? He thought he was like a Roman galley slave chunking it out for Ben Hur there, but it just went over the top. They didn't lack for confidence. I don't think that was it.
And there are a lot of high quality players in the band as well.
There's
some lovely sounds coming through occasionally.
But I think I think they lost their heads a little bit and felt it was going well, and all of a sudden, the quality they had about them was all lost. I had them a little bit higher than 17th, but you know, I don't think they could
complain.
You had them
in that bracket, yeah.
And finally, in 18th place, Kirk and Tillock. They're a better band than this, Kenny.
They certainly are. I mean, they'll be absolutely devastated with that result. You know, I know that they are. And I think they've every right to be as well. The band actually played what they set out to do.
They did. It's always going to be hard work off an early draw. Number two is a dead man's draw, you know. Very, very rarely the band is well off there. But it was a worthy performance. It was very measured. It lacked a little bit of pace and a little bit of spice about it, which some of the other bands had later on. And I think the longer the day went on, the further it dropped down the list, for the simple reason there was nothing particularly memorable about it.
It just needed a bit more energy, didn't it? You know, it was really lacking in drive and spirit, wasn't it?
Out of those three, though, I've got to admit, I think they have got it within them to drag themselves back up the table to stop them from being relegated.
Your third question, I think they've probably got, although on paper they've got a bigger challenge ahead of them next year, you know that they're capable of doing it.
Yeah, I don't know so much about Sellers if they play like that again, and Polysteel, I think they've just got to look at themselves and say, right, let's put the brakes on, you know, be a bit more sensible about their approach. Forget about laughing and joking and thinking that they've come in the top six. They've just got to make sure they come in the top 10 next year. Otherwise, they'll
rolled up and get on with it.
Yeah, you know, forget about thinking, you know, they're Black Dyke or whatever. They've just got to get on and put a solid performance, which a number of bands did on the weekend and had their just rewards for it. But, you know, it'll be interesting next year to find out, you know, it'll be a real scrap for the relegation, to avoid the relegation places.
So that's the 18 performances, and no real controversy this year in the placings.
No, not at all. Certainly the top five were very, very clear of the rest, and the top two amongst them even. A lot of people might have still plumped for Black Dyke in the end. It could have been a toss of a coin in some people's minds.
Yeah, most of the people we spoke to had five out of the top six.
And it was the five that got there, wasn't it?
Yeah, most people had five of the top six. You know, six down, six, seven, eight, nine, ten could have gone really in just about any order. And then you had the bands at the bottom. But it was interesting to... when we spoke to Stephen Mead after the announcement of the results, what his feelings were of what they were looking for in the box.
Stephen Mead, who's one of the adjudicators here. Nice to see you, Stephen, in the
good
box. They must have chosen you after doing the sterling work for Four Bars Rest.
I think that's what did it, Ewan, yeah.
It is. Well, today you must have had a treat. 18 real top-class bands, good quality performances, and a test piece which tested the bands, and as you said off the stage, you thoroughly enjoyed listening to.
Yeah, really, there wasn't a bad performance today. There was good playing all day long. There were some conductors who had clearly done their homework and who clearly had a very good vision, shall we say, of how the piece worked in terms of texture. Some of those conductors had bands that could deliver as well, and in the end that made the difference. A great band with people who really understood the score. I mean, to be honest, it was a beautiful piece to listen to. It wasn't a particularly difficult piece to judge because the score was so clear. Mm-hmm. I know in one or two of the fast sections there's an awful lot going on, but I mean, Ken organized the activity and the rhythmic things so that when you heard a great performance, everything worked. It just worked beautifully. And, you know, it tested every player in the band. There were duets going on from soprano to B-flat bass. You know, Glock playing with the tubas, tuba quartets, two baritones in harmony. You know, solos for third and fourth man down. Whether they got played on third or fourth man down,
I think there's a bit of camouflage work going on in some bands. I must say, one of the points you did make when you talked, thankfully you talked off stage, which was a really welcome again.
Well, we discussed that before we went on, and to be honest, at about 10 o'clock, it wasn't going to happen. But then when we made a few inquiries why it didn't, it was like, well, you can if you want. So we said, okay, well, we will if we've got something to say. And I'm pleased we did, and I think the audience appreciated it, and I hope it's a tradition that will continue now.
Mm-hmm. One of the points that you did make, you said that you were fairly lenient with tempo for the conductor, but you weren't particularly lenient with dynamics, and a lot of the dynamics are, as you said, MPMF, fairly middle-of-the-road dynamics, and only the very best bands made the difference between those.
That's right. Yeah, in terms of the tempo, I think Ken chose the tempos extremely well, because if you actually tried to play any of the fast tempos really too fast, like more than 8 metronome points faster, it actually sounded a mess. Mm-hmm. There were too many stylistic and rhythmic intricacies that had to fit together and work cohesively. It's not like a whiz-bang fast thing where you can really flex your technical muscles. There was style in every one of the fast sections. In terms of the dynamics, again, there were so many step-ups in dynamics between important thematic material, accompanying material, mezzo piano dynamics that became mezzo forte, became forte and fortissimo. And a lot of bands, one or two bands that knew they possessed a very big sound, if you like, flexed their muscles a little bit too much. Mm. And so when the big moments came, they weren't as effective as bands that had managed to control their mezzo dynamics.
You said that you were very clear in your placings of the band, unanimous, whatever. Did you find the same difficulty with the bands at the bottom end of the table? Because there was just as much to play for those with the relegation to the Grand Shield.
Yes, and constantly during the day, we talked, the three of us, about how important it was to focus our attention on how we separate the bottom seven or eight because of the relegation issue. But unfortunately, there were five or six bands towards the bottom today that were very similar. Mm. There were things that we liked, things that we didn't like, musically a little bland, errors in similar places, a similar lack of attention to detail. And so, although we were unanimous, we would have to be honest that it's very hard, not necessarily the bottom three, but in that group above that. And, you know, we just do, we keep copious notes. Whenever a band is finished, we compare one band with another, we read through comments, and you make a judgment. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't a science. This is three experienced people making a decision on the spot based on our appreciation of the musical things that have happened, taking into account the errors that have occurred and the plus factors that undoubtedly happened, because every band had some fantastic moments. And you make a judgment. You can't just plug this into a computer and it comes up with a score. But I would have to say all day long that we were in pretty much total agreement. I was sitting between these two very experienced guys, and it was a pleasure to work with them. They immediately responded to musical things that were attractive. They immediately picked up on errors. And, you know, we had a few rather interesting errors today, you know, a few wrong entries, a timp player playing 10 bars away from where he should have been. Soprano players sticking mutes in where they shouldn't have been. And to some extent, you know, you do have to take it all in and put it in the mix. In the end, you know, it's a music contest. It's not note counting, and it's, you know. So, but tribute to the music, because without this piece, I don't think we would have been able to separate the bands as clearly as I think we did today.
Well, many thanks for taking the time to speak to us, Stephen, and we hope to see you in the box again, and even with 4 bars rest, you never know.
Well, I'm going
to
go home and see what 4 bars rest said and see how wrong we got it.
You may be pleasantly surprised, I don't know. Many thanks indeed, Stephen.
Thanks a lot, Ewan. Bye.
Ewan Fox talking to adjudicator Stephen Mead. So a good test piece, a good contest, plus points and minus points then for this year's event?
Well, lots of plus points as always here at the British Open. Really well organised. Yeah. Great programme this year as well. They invested some time and money in updating the programme, so that was really good. For me, I always think that we need to have a break somewhere about halfway through the contest, even if it's 20 minutes to half hour.
It's a long day, isn't it? It's a long day for 3 minutes in a box.
It was. And the other thing as well, you're noticing more and more and more, is that people are taking longer to go out and have a cup of tea.
It's a nightmare for the bands that are drawn in the middle, isn't it?
It is. If you've drawn around about 1 or 2 o'clock, most people are popping out for a cup of tea and a sandwich somewhere. And again, the hall, even though all the tickets are sold and there were people queuing up for tickets in the morning, even for Black Dyke, it wasn't full, was it? I would say 3/4 full it was for Black Dyke.
But one improvement on previous years, though, there were less bands played to really small audiences. We have seen bands playing 150, 200 people, which in Symphony Hall is just an absolute joke, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yesterday, it wasn't like that, was it?
No, and I think that, you know, a lot of that's down to the test piece. Yeah. The draw, I think, helped it as well. There was always a little bit of interest, possibly, as you say, like midday when it went a little bit flat, and that's possibly when they needed to have the break. The other thing for me, though, I've got to remember if Kenny agrees with this, is that the award of the best soprano and the best soloist, I think that needs to be taken away from the adjudicators and given to someone else. It looks like a consolation prize, isn't it?
It comes just looking like a consolation prize. I mean, I'm sure Pete Roberts and Richard Marshall, the last thing they wanted was to go home with just a solo prize. You know, they came down here to win the contest. And
you say it's
else.
A consolation prize, though, but last year it didn't work like that.
Well, that's the strange thing about it, you see. Peter Roberts, fantastic player, you know, brilliant soprano player, and Richard Marshall, fantastic solo corner player. But it's hard then for people in the audience to equate why, if they were so good, why the band didn't win.
I mean, one thing, a possible solution to that perceived problem, if you like, and one thing that I know has been tried in Scotland in recent years, where there are a lot of individual awards at the Scottish Championships, and they actually use a different judge, somebody actually sitting in the audience watching. An eminent judge, though, Jim Scott, Keith Wilkinson, people like that have done it.
Oh, it was good. The strange thing, the writing in the test piece, some of the cornet work, which was written for third and fourth man down, was actually played by the first or second solo corner player.
I think there were more principal cornet players played it than anything else.
It is. The prize could have gone to possibly a third man down, who had a real difficult job.
And the one in particular that I heard it was the chap at Desford. The third man at Desford was money, wasn't he?
And there was a couple of bands that really did play what was written on the score, and possibly those players should get a little bit of time in the limelight as well. So possibly that's one little change. Great to see as well Stephen Mead speaking to the audience. You know, we've been told in the past that the judges are not going to speak here, but when they do, it's so much appreciated.
It's much more illuminating, isn't it? You know, the guy's got something to say. He's an articulate chap, you know. He's really got a message to tell everybody, and gave the audience a better understanding of why that was the result.
It was, so, you know, hopefully that'll be carrying on at London, hopefully as well in a few weeks' time, but the British Open for years to come. But as I say, lots and lots of plus points. And even the little niggles that we got, if they were fixed, but no contest is perfect, but the British Open is fairly close to it.
Contest highlights then, Ewan?
I think the two performances from Corey and Black Dyke, unquestionably fantastic performances in anybody's book, and it really was a pleasure to sit back and listen to playing at that standard.
Yeah, I can only agree with that. I mean, the last third of Black Dyke was truly inspiring, wasn't it? You know, and really, I wouldn't have thought for a second that was going to be beaten by anybody. But for Corey to come on straight after that and deliver the performance he did, absolutely electrifying, wasn't it?
It was. And hats off to them, you know. They've waited a long time, 5 years since they last won here. They've come close in the past, but with a performance like this, I think they will be one of the real bands to beat now when it comes to London.
Well, chaps, we'll wrap things up there. We'll be back with our next podcast in 2 weeks' time from Harrogate for the lower section national finals. Our congratulations then to Corey and Bob Childs for becoming the 2007 British Open champions. Our thanks to Phil Lawrence and the Fairy Band for the podcast theme, and to Normans for sponsoring this podcast. Until then, goodbye.